So we are holding on Menhei Amud Beis about two-thirds of the way down the Amud, winding in West Lake. Okay. So we were in the middle of discussing. Now, we've been discussing these last couple of blocks, the Dinim of Muksa, and in particular the various Macholikasin of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in that regard, where Rabbi Yehuda is more Machmir and holds of a broader definition of Muksa, and Rabbi Shimon generally is Makel. We said there are a couple of things that Rabbi Shimon is Machmir on. One of them is where it's Muksa because of an Isser. For example, the oil wallet in a lamp on Shabbos. What we said is that is Machmir when it was Huxel Mitzvah, when something was designated for the purpose of a mitzvah, as is the case with the oil and lamp on Shabbos, where it was designated for the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. We said he would also agree about grogus for simukim, about figs or grapes that are in the process of drying, that he would agree that they're muksa because during the time while they're drying, they're not really edible. The last thing we were talking about, we started talking about the question, which of those tanoim does Rabbi Yochanan hold by? We learned before, we discussed a few days ago about who Rav holds by, and we discussed it yesterday. We said that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, so we were starting to discuss what Rabbi Shimon says. We said that Rabbi Yochanan had quoted what the Chachmei HaYeshiva said, that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. We assume that that means that he approves of that. And then we were discussing how that fits with a certain din that Rabbi Yochanan had said about moving about not being allowed to move a chicken coop on Shabbos. We said in the end that we could be talking about there's an egg in the chicken coop which already has a chick growing inside it. But then that kind of thing is completely unusable on Shabbos. The chick itself is actually considered nevela until it's born. You can't even feed it to a dog because of the shell. So therefore, even if we say that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shimon, that din would still follow if we say that the chicken coop has an egg in it that has an embryo forming inside it. Okay. So now we're going to continue that discussion and see what Rabbi Yochanan actually holds. So the Gemara says, he also Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, when Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda, so he said that actually no, Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amr halacha ki Rabbi Shimon, whereas it was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi who said that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So now we see clearly that it's not that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shimon, it's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi does. Amr of Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, "Heinu de Amr Rav Baba Chana Amr of Yechanan Amru Alacha Kedem Shimon Amru." Now we understand what's going on over here. Rav Baba Chana had previously reported in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that Amru Halacha Kedem Shimon, that the Bnei HaYeshiva said that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Now we understand what Rabbi Yechanan meant by that. Not that he actually agreed with it. He means Amru. He means they said it. The Leilai Svidalei, but he himself does not hold of that. He himself holds the halacha is like a Yehuda. So therefore, that means that now the whole discussion we had before about the chicken coop becomes much simpler. Now when we're saying that he said that you're not allowed to move the chicken coop on Shabbos, we don't have to say that we're talking about where there's a dead bird in it or where there's an egg containing an embryo in it. We don't need any of that. Now we can just say simply, he means that the chicken coop is meant to hold. Is meant to hold chickens. Therefore, as long as it had chickens in it at the beginning of Shabbos, which usually it does, then it's a bosses for Java also for all of Shabbos. Because again, as we've learned before, Rabbi Yehuda holds the concept that once something is mukta for the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta for the whole Shabbos. So therefore, very simple. Therefore, that's why Rabbi Yochanan was saying that the chicken coop is muksa on Shabbos. Okay. Fine. Amalei Abaye le Rabbi Yosef. Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, why did you need to wait for Rabbi Yosef's report to realize that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda? Didn't you think before that Rabbi Yochanan held like Rabbi Yehuda? I can prove you from a different perspective that we should have known all along that Rabbi Yochanan holds that. Because Rav Abba and Rav Asi iklu lebeir Rav Abba de min Chefa, it happened once that Rav Abba and Rav Asi one time visited the house of Rav Abba from Chefa. The pashtus Chefa is Haifa nowadays. Anyway, the nafal menarchal glimig Rav Asi, a lamp fell onto Rav Asi's coat. The lamp fell onto Rav Asi's coat. The loy tiltala, and he didn't move it. He didn't move it. Why? The pashtus, because he figured that it's mukta. Now, what it means is he didn't move it. The ritva says just means, in other words, okay, he wasn't going to sit there with the rest of Shabbos with the lamp on top of his coat. What it means is he didn't pick it up directly to remove it from the coat. Rather, he shook the coat out and let the lamp fall to the floor. As we discussed before, for example, about what you do if you find money on a pillow on Shabbos or something. With that said, one of the achronim in the back of the Gemara, the Chachmas Manoach, wants to say that maybe in that particular case he actually left the garment there for all of Shabbos. Maybe he didn't need it that much. Maybe he didn't want that if he shakes out the garment and the lamp falls on the floor, it's going to break, and he didn't want that. Whatever the case, the point is we see that he didn't actually pick it up and move it. Now my timer. Now why would he not have done that? Lav Mishum Rav Asi Talmidei Rav Yechanan Haver. Presumably it's because Rav Asi is a Talmud of Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan to Rav Yehuda to the lady is by Mukta. And Rav Yechanan agrees with Rav Yehuda that the lamp is Mukta as long as we said in the Mishnah that Rav Yehuda would say it's Mukta if it was ever lit in with four, even if it was actually not lit with this particular Shabbos. Rav Yehuda would still say that if it's an earthenware lamp, that it's Mukta because Machnas Miyus, because the inside of it is filthy and disgusting, and it's not really, you can't really clean it properly, and therefore he would say that's mukta. So we see, Rabbi is saying to Rabbi Yehuda, so you see from that story alone that evidently Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda answers him, Menauta Kamer, you're talking about a situation involving a lamp that fell on it? Menauta Shiny, a lamp is a whole different matter. The reason why Rav Asi, you can't necessarily prove from that story that Rav Asi was not moving it because in general he holds that lamps are mukta. It might be, or in general, because he holds that mukta machnas miyus or other kinds of mukta exist on Shabbos, it might be that this was a special case involving a lamp because the Amr of Acha Barachanina Amr of Asi Hoda Reshlokish B'Tzidon, Reshlokish Paskin in the city of Tzidon. That is a difference depending on the size of the lamp. Even if, let's say, we're talking about a new lamp that's never been used before, even we talked about the other day, a metal lamp, which maybe is not mukta machnas miyus because the inside of it can be cleaned afterwards. But even within that, we have that Resh Lakish one-time paskin in Sidon, menorah hanitelus v'yodei achas, when it's a lamp that's smaller, menorah actually, over here, is not necessarily a lamp, it's a candelabra, whatever. Anyway, so a menorah that's small enough to hanitelus v'yodei achas, that's small enough to pick up in one hand, also mutar l'taltala, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, like any other kind of thing, because basically we would say Rish Lakish holds like Rav Shimon, that just because it's a candelabra, just because normally it's meant for lighting in doesn't necessarily make it mukta. But he says b'shtei yad of also v'talkula. If it's a large one that you can't hold it with one, that you can't pick it up with one hand, you have to use two hands to pick it up. Then Rish Lakish says it's also, and not because of the matter of it being a lamp, and mukta machmas miyus or whatever. But the Gemara is going to say soon why a large lamp like that, that it takes two hands to lift, why it should be mukta. In any case, that was a shlokish. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, anu ein manu ela b'ner k'Rav Shimon. No, the only case we have of moving a lamp on Shabbos is the case that, like Rav Shimon says, where mukta machmas miyus, where he would say, we're not going to hold a mukta machmas miyus, and therefore you're allowed to move it. Ava Menorah, but when it comes to a candelabra, then Nitla B'yadei Achas, then Nitla B'shtei Yadav, whether it can be picked up with one hand or whether it takes two hands, also a Kalkula, then you're also to move it. So there you go. Here we're talking about a candelabra. So even if we're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rabbi Shimon, and maybe not, Tosfos said, maybe he doesn't agree with Rabbi Shimon on everything. We said before, after all, that basically he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. But at least as far as this particular detail of, Mukta Machmas Mius, he doesn't necessarily hold like Rabbi Shimon in that. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that just the fact alone that it's a candelabra, even if it's light enough to be picked up with one hand, as we're going to see in a second, Rabbi Yochanan would say it's also to move it. Well, that might be why Rabbi Asi didn't move the candelabra that fell on his clothes and only, like the Ritva says, shook it off, or like the Chochmas Manoach says, maybe just left it there for the rest of Shabbos. Nothing to do with the dinim. Nothing to do with the dinim of Mukta Machmas Mius or Mukta Machmas Mitzvah or all these other things we've been discussing up until now, but a special din that applies to candelabras. So the question is, the time of my, okay, why should there be a difference between a candelabra and anything else? Rabbi, Rabbi Yosef, Tami Karvai, Yosef, Rabbi, and Rabbi Yosef both say, the reason is, because a candelabra is the kind of thing where you set aside a permanent place for it in the house, and you don't usually move it from there. So therefore, in other words, so it's nothing to do with the regular dinim of muksa, but, well, I mean, it is a din of muksa, but it's a new kind of muksa that we're talking about before. Than what we were talking about before. Because a person generally puts it in one place and leaves it there, then therefore a person has in mind to begin with, at the beginning of Shabbos, he's having in mind, I'm not going to be using this for any other purpose throughout Shabbos. I have this in its place, in the living room or wherever, and I'm leaving it there for the rest of Shabbos. So therefore, so the machlokes would be, what size candelabra does that apply to? Does that apply to any size, or does it only apply to a particularly large one? Rabbi Shlokish would say only a particularly large one. Rabbi Yochanan would say either kind. But the point is, that has nothing to do with the regular dinim of Mukta Machmas Mitzvah and Mukta Machmas Mius that we've been talking about all along. Omalei Abaya Rabbi Yosef. However, Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, that can't be the reason why you shouldn't be able to move a candelabra on Shabbos. Varei Kilas Chasanim, consider a canopy of Chasanim, which is a two-poster bed where you have each end of the bed has a pole sticking up vertically from the end of the bed, and you split it also, so it has two poles like that. It also has a pole that goes horizontally between the two vertical poles. So you have a chest shape over the bed, and then you spread out a sheet, and it hangs on the two sides of that like a tent. That kind of thing is called Kilas Chasanim. It's called the canopy bed of a chosen. I guess because chasanim usually use such a kind of thing. I don't know. In any case, that kind of thing is a large piece of furniture. The adam kaveh alei makom, a person usually sets aside a place in their house for the kilas chasanim. And yet, the amash Shmuel mishum rechia. Yet Shmuel says in the name of rechia, mutzav and toiso mutzav a perk of a Shabbos. You're allowed to set it up on Shabbos, and you're allowed to take it down on Shabbos. Because the point is, if it was a four-poster bed, where when you spread out the sheets and you have a horizontal surface on top, then you would have a problem putting it up or taking it down on Shabbos, because then you're creating an oihel, which would be related to the malacha of Binyan. But because over here we're talking about that it comes to a peaked roof. It has a peaked roof like a tent. Then therefore he's saying that you're allowed to do it. Mind you, actually, the Gemara is not getting into the details over here, but later on in the 20th Perek of Amasechta, we're going to learn more details and more dinim about that. But actually, there's only a very small range of situations where you're allowed to put one up on Shabbos. Anyway, the point is that we see the basic idea, though. He says that you're allowed to set it up or take it down on Shabbos. Even though that's a kind of a piece of furniture that has usually a designated place over Shabbos, still we say there's no problem doing anything with moving it on Shabbos. So therefore, why should it be any different with the candelabra? Ela Amar Abaya. So no, Abaya says there's a different reason why Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish would be saying that there were restrictions on moving a candelabra on Shabbos. the shel chuyos. What we're talking about is a candelabra that's made out of sections. Sometimes you have a large candelabra like that. It's not cast all as one big piece of metal. It's made of pieces. It's made of sections that screw together or that somehow attach together. And the problem with that is, therefore, if you move it on Shabbos, then it may fall apart, and then you're going to come to put it back together on Shabbos, which would be awesome. There's actually a machlokas later on in the Masechta about the question of whether yesh binyan b'kelim or yesh sira b'kelim. Do we say that the concept of building or taking something apart applies to kelim or not? We say that actually the Hillel holds, but not. Tosfos distinguishes over here between how tightly they are together, how tightly the pieces are together. But besides that, there's also Rashi later on says that if you put it together, there's anyway a different malacha called makah b'pakish, where you're completing, you're doing the last hammer blow, or in this case, you're doing the last item to make the keli functional, and that's how it would be in this case. So in any case, Abaye says, so that's the point. So because there's the possibility that if you move a candelabra, which is made out of pieces, it might fall apart as you're moving it, and therefore we're saying that you shouldn't move it on Shabbos. So Yochanan would say that applies whether it's a small candelabra or a large one, because either way it may come apart. And Rosh Lakish is saying only if it's the kind of really large one where it takes two hands to carry it, only then are we concerned that as you're moving it around, it may fall apart. Okay, the question is, Yehochi my time of Shimon ben Lakish to Shari. Okay, then why does Rosh Lakish allow it? If you have the problem that it may fall apart and you're going to put it back together, then why would Rosh Lakish allow it with a small one? And Rabbi Yochanan is saying not. The answer is, my chuyos ke'ein chuyos. The answer is, when Abaye is talking about a candelabra that's made out of pieces, he doesn't mean literally it's made out of pieces. He means that it has the appearance of one that's made out of pieces. Meaning, what it really means is the ispa chibki. It has grooves in it. So when you look at it, if you don't look carefully, then the grooves make it look like it's actually made out of separate pieces. So therefore the bottom line would be like this. If it's actually made out of segments, if the menorah is actually made out of segments, then it doesn't matter whether it's a small one or whether it's a large one. Either way, it would be mutter to move it for the reason that we just said, because it may fall apart as you're moving it, and then you're going to come to put it back together on Shabbos, and you'd be over either on, if we say that there's binyan and stira and kalin, then you'd be over on that. If not, then you'd be over on makah b'pakish. So that's if it's actually made out of pieces. And then Shulchan Aruch says, when we mean that you're not allowed to move it, we mean even with Tzorach Gufo or Makoma, we mean even if you need the space where it was, even if you want to use it for something else. So again, what the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch is that it would be an issue of Bona, because when we say Ein Binyan B'Kalim, the Ein Sira B'Kalim, that's talking about if you're putting them together, if you're putting them together sort of loosely. If you have a keli that comes apart and you put it together sort of loosely, then we say that binyan and sira doesn't really apply to it. But if you actually attach them together tightly, then it's actually considered boina if it's meant to last for a long time. By the way, that kind of thing comes up into play. I mean, we'll talk about boina in more detail later in the Masechta Bez Hashem. But for example, this is one of the factors that comes into play. Actually, this is the major factor that comes into play when we're talking about dinim involving, for example, you playing with Lego on Shabbos. You have an issue with boina with this because the pieces, you don't usually make a Lego thing meant to last for a long time. But on the other hand, the pieces do fit tightly together and they could conceivably last for a long time. So it would be an issue of boina, at least in Abanan, and maybe even based on this Daraisa. Anyway, the point is, we're turning to the menorah over here. So again, if you were to put it together, after it fell apart, and you put it together properly, hammering the pieces together or screwing them together or whatever it is, then it would be an issue of bona. So therefore, such a menorah, if it's actually made out of pieces, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. And even if it's a large, even if it only has grooves, but if it's a large one and it has grooves, also you're not allowed to gzeira also gzeira the choyas. Then everybody would agree that a large one, the kind where, as we said, it takes two hands to carry it, it would be also to move it on Shabbos because of the, because it might easily be confused with one where there are choyas. People are not going to realize that, that people are not going to realize that there's a diff, that, 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 that this one is not actually made out of pieces. They're going to think that it's made out of pieces, and then they're going to think that they can carry the large ones on Shabbos, etc. The machlokas would strictly be when you're talking about a small one. When you're talking about a small one which has grooves in it. So now there's two things. First of all, it's a small one; it's less likely to fall apart. Number two, it's not actually going to fall apart because, after all, it does not actually made out of pieces. It just has grooves. So that would be the machlokas, Rish Lakish and Rav Yechanan. Mar Sava Gazrinan or Mar Sava like Gazrinan. Rav Yechanan would say that we still have to make a zera, and Rish Lakish would say we don't have to. So that's it. So now we understand this whole matter of when we say that a menorah fell on his garment and he didn't pick it up and move it on Shabbos. So now we understand that has nothing to do with the regular dinim of muksa that we were dealing with up until now. The question of Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon as far as muksa machmas mitzvah or muksa machmas iser or machmas miros or what have you. We're talking swiftly. A din that has to do with a candelabra because of the problem that you might that you might put it back together on Shabbos if it falls apart, or because you might confuse it with the kind of candelabra that you could, and therefore so that would be when Rav Asi didn't pick it up, it was because his Rebbe is Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan says you're not allowed to whether it's a small or a large one. So there you go. He didn't pick it up because of that. So we still can't see from that. So therefore, Abaya, we got into this. Because Abaya was asking Rabbi Yosef, didn't that story demonstrate that Rabbi Yechanan holds, like Rabbi Yehuda, that he holds that the candelabra would be muksa? Now we understand. Yeah, he says it's muksa, but for a different reason, nothing to do with anything that we were talking about until now. So we could still say that up until then, we might have thought that Rabbi Yechanan held like Rabbi Shimon. Now, once we had Rabbi Yosef's report, now it becomes clear that Rabbi Yechanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and it's other Amiroyim in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and his Talmidim who hold like Rabbi Shimon. Okay. So the question still is, Umi Amar Rabbi Yechanan Hachi, but did Rabbi Yechanan really say such a thing that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Well, Amar Rabbi Yechanan halacha k'stam mishnah. We said Rabbi Yechanan has a general rule that the halacha is like a stam mishnah, utnan, and we have a mishnah in Masechta Kelim. We quoted it the other day. So we're going to quote it again now. Muchni Shalah, the Mishnah over there was talking about a Shida, which we said there, Rashi says that a Shida is a wagon made out of wood or something. Tosfos discusses over there that it may mean a large cabinet or a large cabinet or chest or something. The Shida, whatever a Shida is, has a Muchni. Rashi understands Muchni to be the wheels of the wagon. Tosfos discusses that it might mean Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim say it would mean the base, so it could. Muchni could still mean a wheel. We find in other places in Shas where Muchni means a wheel, but they would understand that it's a wheel that's being used as a base for the cabinet rather than a wheel to ride around on. And the Rambam understands Muchni in this case as being like a drawer. The Rambam agrees that it means a cabinet, and he says that the Muchni is a drawer. Anyway, the Mishnah says, this man shehi nishmetis, if that Muchni can easily be removed from the Shiga, then ein chibula, then it's not considered connected to it as far as that if the shida becomes tameh, that the muchni will become tameh as well. Also, the ein nimdedet ima, we don't measure it as part of the volume. We said before that if you have a wooden keli whose volume is at least 40 sa of dry measure, then that wooden keli is not makabel tumah. because we learned before, because such a keli is too heavy to move while it's full. It's called, it's not metalto mole vereikon, it's not movable while it's empty and while it's full. And therefore, it's not like the, in last week's parasha, in parasha Shmini, when we learn about the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, the pasuk mentions over there, the pasuk mentions over there wooden kelim, and it mentions a sack. And the point is, we see, therefore, there has to be a certain comparison, there has to be a certain similarity between a wooden keli and a sack. A sack is something that you can move empty or full. You can move around an empty sack. You can move around a full sack. For a wooden keli to be mekabel tumah, it has to be the same kind of thing also. Metalto mole vereikon. In this case, if it holds 40 sar or more, then you can't do that. If you try to move it, it's going to break because of the size of it. Therefore, it's not mekabel tumah. What we're saying is, if the mukhni, whatever the mukhni is, a wheel or a base or a drawer, if it's easily removable from the shida, then it doesn't count towards the volume of 40 sar. So then, is the shida mekabel tumah? We would have to see whether it itself it has a capacity of 40 sar without counting the volume of the wheel. The ein masela, this is if the wheel is removable. The ein masela ima ba'oil ames. It does not save things from becoming tomei with it in an oil ames. We discussed the other day that Rashi had learned that what that means is, again, Rashi says that we're talking about the wheels of a wagon. So basically, we're talking about if various Rishonim talk about to try and understand what Rashi means, because what Rashi says over there is not quite so clear. But one explanation is that Rashi means, let's say you have something inside the wagon and sticking out over the wheel. So the wheel would prevent the tumah from going the wheel would ordinarily block the tumah from going to the object that's hanging out over it. But because in this case the wheel is removable from the wagon, then it doesn't do that, and therefore the wagon and therefore the thing ends up being the kabel tumah. Again, Tosfos over there in the Rambam, who learned that a mukhni is a base or a drawer, will understand that differently. They'll understand it to mean that, for example, if you have something in the base, if you have something inside the base, then it's not going to be protected from becoming tamei together with, in other words, if the shida itself is 40 sa, then we're not going to say that, okay, but it has a base, and therefore the base, whatever's inside the base, is not going to be makabel tumah either. We don't say that. According to the Rambam, same thing if something is inside the drawer. Anyway, the in Goren Oseh B'Shabbos, if the Shida, again, if it's Mukhni is removable, then you can't move it around on Shabbos, because then when you do that, you're going to dig up the dirt. The in Goren Oseh B'Shabbos is Man Sheyesh Aleh HaMoed. You're not allowed to drag it around on Shabbos when there is money in it. We said the other day that the mukhni, however we define the mukhni, has a space inside it for coins. So conceivably you could have at the beginning of Shabbos, sometime during Shabbos, whether at the beginning of Shabbos or whether later on, there were coins inside it. And therefore we're saying, because there are coins inside it, therefore it's mukhta, and you can't drag it around on Shabbos. Now, the implication is that it's only also, that the mukhni is only also if there's money on it right now, implying ha ein aleha moiz, implying if there's no coins on it right now, shalya, then it would be allowed to move the mukhni on Shabbos, ba'afagab dehavu aleh ben ashmoshes, even though there were coins on it ben ashmoshes, and then they were removed sometime during Shabbos. Now, according to Reb Shimon, that works, because Reb Shimon, again, doesn't hold to the concept that because it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains mukta for all of Shabbos. But Rabbi Yehuda, who does hold of that concept, so the Mishnah apparently does not work according to him. And if it doesn't work according to him, it's a Stam Mishnah. So according to Rabbi Yochanan's rule, the halacha should be like it. And yet you're telling us that the halacha, Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So what's going on over here? Amr Abzera. So Rabbi Zera says, okay, Kehei Mishnah Senu Shaloi Ha Yuala Amoiz called Bein Ashmoshes, we're going to have to say that that Mishnah in Kalim is talking about when it says that there's no coins on it, what it really means is not talking about whether there's coins on it right now when you want to move the Mukhni. It's talking about at the beginning of Shabbos, during Bein Ashmoshes, were there coins on it? And then we would say the Mishnah, so it's a bit of a forced way to explain the Mishnah, but we have to do that, Shaloi Lishbur Dvarav Shalob Yechanan, in order not to make Rabbi Yechanan's statements contradict each other, where on the one hand he says the halacha and he's like a Stam Mishnah. On the other hand, he's saying the halacha is like a Yehuda. So in order to make those not contradict each other, we're going to have to be forced to say that the Mishnah there doesn't mean that the Mukhni is Mukta if it has coins on it. Right now, it means it's Mukta if it had coins on it, Dena Shmoshes, and then it remains Mukta for the whole rest of Shabbos. Before, by the way, when we quoted this Mishnah before on Mendalot on the days, we gave a different explanation. We said over there we were trying to explain Rav's opinion over there. We said that the Mishnah can be understood more straightforwardly, and it goes according to Rav Shimon. But that only works according to Rav, because Rav never said that halacha is like a Stam Mishnah. So we can say that Rav is not contradicted by that Mishnah, because that Mishnah is according to Rav Shimon, and Rav holds according to Rav Yehuda. Rav Yochanan, who over here, though, who says halacha is a Stam Mishnah, we have to explain the Mishnah differently according to him. So we would have to say, according to him, that the Mishnah is, after all, like Rav Yehuda, but we would have to say that the Mishnah actually is according to Rav Yehuda, and it's talking about the money was on their Bein HaShemashes. Okay. All right. More on this topic of candelabras and of candelabras and lamps on Shabbos. Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, Tam Achas Holach Rebbe the Diaspora. One time Rebbe went to Diaspora, which is the name of a place. Vahoda the Menorah Kid of Shimon Ben Ner. He passed in there regarding a candelabra, like Reb Shimon regarding a lamp. So now we have a question. What does that mean? Hoda the menorah could have Shimon ben Ner lahatera. Do we mean just as in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon had said that you're allowed to move a lamp, even if it was lit at the beginning of Shabbos, as long as it's not lit right now, Rabbi Shimon allows you to move it. So we're saying then that Rebbe gave a similar sack as far as a candelabra, that you would be allowed to move it. Similar to what we were saying at the top of the Amud, we were talking about a menorah involved that a menorah that has grooves in it, where we said we're not talking about a menorah that's actually made out of pieces, but we're talking about a small menorah that has grooves in it, where we said Rishlokish would allow you to move such a menorah on Shabbos. So if we understand it that way, it means that Rebbe said the same thing as Rishlokish did later on, that you're allowed to move such a candelabra on Shabbos. Is that what it means? That just like Reb Shimon allows it in the case of a lamp, the same way Rebbe allowed it in the case of a small candelabra with grooves. Oy Dilma, or maybe what it means is heard of the menorah at least sura uch Reb Shimon menorah lahetera. Or does it mean actually that he gave two different pesukim? Number one about a menorah that you're not allowed to move it, because like Reb Yochanan, as we said before, because you might confuse it even if it only has grooves and even if it's small, you might confuse it with the kind that's actually made out of pieces. And then a separate din, he said like Reb Shimon that you're allowed to move a regular lamp, not a candelabra, because a lamp is a one-piece object. So what does it mean? Does it mean that he gave one sack, or does it mean that he gave two different stuckim? That's how Rashi understands it. Tosfos understands the question a little differently. The question is, did he give two pesukim? We know that he gave two pesukim. The question is, were both of them laheter, or was one laheter and one laister? And the Gemara says, Tekel, we can't resolve it based on the way Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi phrased it. We can't resolve what Rebbe actually said. We can see clearly that fine. He passed in like Reb Shimon when it comes to a lamp that you're allowed to move it. But did he say that a menorah is also mutter to move under some circumstances, or did he say not? It's not clear from the description what he said. Okay. Continuing on this topic, Reb Malkia Ikla the Beit of Simloi. Reb Malkia one time visited the house of Reb Simloi on Shabbos, of Reb Simloi on Shabbos. The Tilpel Shraga, he moved a lamp that had previously been lit on Shabbos and now went out, and he moved it. The Ikva, Reb Simloi was upset at him for that. So we see that these Amiroyim argue respectively. Reb Malkia agrees with Reb Shimon that the lamp is not in and of itself mukta once it goes out. And meanwhile, Reb Simloi holds like Reb Yehuda, and therefore he objected to Reb Malkia doing it. Because at least, okay, you want to hold like Reb Shimon in your own house, fine, but don't do it in my house where we hold like Reb Yehuda. similarly, Rabbi Yossi Glilah Iklal Asrid Rabbi Yossi Bechamina, Rabbi Yossi from Galil. This is not, by the way, the Pashas. This is not Rabbi Yossi Aglili that we have the Tana many times, because he's a contemporary of Rabbi Yossi Bechamina, who is an Amora. So it's a different Rabbi Yossi, a later Rabbi Yossi who came from the Galil. Anyway. So Ikla Asred Rabbi Shurban Leiv, Ikla Asred Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina. He one time visited Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina's town, so not even necessarily his house, but just a town where Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina lives. Tiltel Shraga. Again, he moved a lamp on Shabbos after it had gone out, like Reb Shimon says. The Ikbad Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, and Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina was upset about that. For the same reason, they have the same machlokes. Rabbi Yosef Glila apparently holds like Reb Shimon, and Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Another example, Rav Abahu, he ikal after the Rav Shulam Levi. Rav Abahu would do like this: when he was visiting the hometown of the Rav Shulam Levi, have a metalful shraga, then he would move lamps on Shabbos after they had gone out, like Rav Shimon. But he ikal after the Rav Yechanan loy have a metalful shraga. But when he visited Rav Yechanan's town, he would not move them. So the question is, why? With all the other Amaroyim, it's clear so far what they hold. Some of them hold like Rav Shimon, some of them hold like Rav Yehuda. But what is Rav Abahu doing over here? Marashah, no matter how you look at it. He could have Yehuda, Svirale. If he holds like Rav Yehuda, Levid could have Yehuda, then let him hold like Rav Yehuda, let him do like Rav Yehuda always, and say that you're never allowed to move the lamp. He could have Shimon, Svirale, Levid could have Shimon. And if he holds like Rav Shimon, then he should always be able to follow Rav Shimon and always be able to move the lamp once it went out. Why is he doing sometimes one way, sometimes the other way? The answer is La'olam k'Rav Shimon Tzvirle. He actually, for sure, he really does hold like Rav Shimon. U'mishum k'voyde, that Rav Yechanan hu d'loy have a ovid. All it is because of the kavod of Rav Yechanan, when he was in Rav Yechanan's hometown, he would not do it over there. Now, obviously, Rashi says it couldn't be the other way around. You can't say that he really holds like Rav Yehuda, that it is mukta, but when he visited Rav Yeshua ben Levi's town, then he would allow it, because obviously he's not going to say that something that's mukta is going to be allowed to move on Shabbos because of the covet of Rav Shulam Levi. But it could be the other way around, that he really holds mukta, and so he really would have done it everywhere, but out of respect for Rav Yechanan, he's not going to go against Rav Yechanan's opinion. We said before, Rav Yechanan holds like Rav Yehuda. He's not going to go against Rav Yechanan in Rav Yechanan's only home, in Rav Yechanan's own hometown. Okay, so now up until now, we've been talking about this concept of moving a lamp on Shabbos after it went out. So now we're going to have a further distinction within that. Is there a difference between what kinds of lamps you're allowed to? Now again, we have to remember that we said Rav Shimon had allowed you to move the lamp after it goes out on Shabbos, because he didn't hold of the concept of mukta machmas mir. He didn't hold that there's such a thing that because something became disgusting and you're never going to use it for something else, that therefore it should be also to use it on Shabbos. He also didn't hold of the concept of mukta machmas isur, but okay, that's another matter. Actually, he said he does. He holds of the concept of mukta machmas mitzvah, and therefore that results in an isur. But he doesn't hold of mukta machmas mir, whereas Rabbi Yehuda does. So now we're going to talk within that whether there's a distinction between different kinds of lamps, what you use to light the lamp with. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shraga the Mishcha Shari L'Tatola, if it's a lamp that uses oil, then you are allowed to move it on Shabbos, like Rav Shimon says. But the Nefta, but if it's a lamp that is lit with Neft, which we learned before in the second parak about Neft, it's something like turpentine or kerosene or whatever. We said it's very dangerous stuff, it's very volatile, but in addition, it also smells really bad. So we said, also the Tatola, so you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos, says Rabbi Yehuda, because that kind of thing, even more so, Mela, an earthenware lamp that you use for oil, okay, it becomes disgusting inside because it becomes dirty from the oil, and you can never properly clean it, but fine, it's not so disgusting as something which uses Neft, where in addition, the Neft itself smells bad, and therefore you're always going to have that lamp is going to have a bad smell around it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to move such a lamp on Shabbos, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, though, both say that you would be allowed to, even if it's lit with neft. So Actually, Tosfos, by the way, has a different understanding of this whole thing, that we're not talking about over here, like Rashi says, about an earthenware one, and we're talking whether it's mutter or not, according to Rav Shimon. Tosfos learns that we're talking about a metal one, and the question is, according to Rav Yehuda. We said a couple of days ago that a metal lamp, which doesn't absorb as much, we said that Rav Yehuda would allow you to move it on Shabbos, because we said that, it's not mukta machmas miyut, but when it comes to, Rav Yehuda would say, though, that when it comes to one that's made out of net, that's lit with neft, then Rav Yehuda would say that kind is also, and Rabbi and Rav Yosef would be saying that even that's mukta. The part that we have here, so again, according to Rashi, the question is according to Rav Shimon, according to Tosfos, and we're talking about an earthenware one, according to Tosfos, the question is according to Rav Yehuda, and we're talking about a metal one. Anyways, the reason why Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef say that, so you have here in parenthesis, the Hoyo Bechazil Chafes Bamana, but actually the Marshal takes that out because we haven't yet established that reason. We're going to explain on the basis of something that we're going to explain now in the Gemara, we're going to explain why Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef would allow you to move a lamp that was lit with neft, where again, on the face of it, neft is very smelly stuff. So therefore, shouldn't it be considered mukta machmas miyus, or very miyus, or whatever? Nevertheless, they're saying it's mukta. Why? We're going to see from the next story.
Because it's beneficial.
No, but the point is...
You don't want to leave, so you move it, it's beneficial to you.
No, but the point is, mukta, anything that you would want to move as mukta is beneficial. But the point is, you still have rules. There are mukta, you can't move mukta things on Shabbos. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that in the case where it was lit using neft, then according to Rashi, even Rav Shimon would agree you're not allowed to. According to Tosfos, Rabbi Yehuda would say that even if the metal one, you're not allowed to. So why are Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef saying differently? So that we'll see based on the next story. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Ivya Ikra Lebei Rava. Rabbi Ivya one time visited Rava's house, having Isan Bei Kare Betina. His socks or his shoes or whatever were dirty with mud. He sat down on a bed or on a couch in front of Rava, and therefore, in doing that, he got the bed or the couch a little bit dirty with mud. Ikvad Rava, so Rava found that objectionable. So he decided he wanted to bother Rav Ivya with a question and try to get Rav Ivya stuck basically on a question that he wouldn't be able to answer. Now, you're going to ask, how does Rava, the great Amor, the Tzaddik, is going to care about there's a little bit of mud on his bed? So we'll learn the story first, and then we'll talk about something that Sam Sofer says on it. Anyway, so Omalei, so he asked Rav Ivya, my time of Rabbi Rav Yosef, Ami Kavar, Shraga, the Nafta, Nami, Shori, the Tzaddik, why indeed do Rabbi and Rav Yosef both say that a lamp that's lit with neft, you're allowed to move it? After all, neft is very smelly stuff. Shouldn't it be that such a keli has no other possible use on Shabbos, and it should be mukta? Omalei, so sort of Ivya says, Hoyo v'chadil v'chasuya b'mona. Because, fine, the inside of it is dirty, but you could still use the lamp itself to cover a keli. You could still use it. For example, you have, let's say, you have a bottle or a can or something that right now you can't find the lid for. So you take this lamp and you use it to cover it as a makeshift lid. So you could do that. The outside of it, isn't it? So therefore it wouldn't be mukta. So Rabbi asked him, Elamai Asa, by that logic, call Tzroda Shabachot in the Talmud. By that logic, you could say that any little rock that you find in your yard should be mutter to move on Shabbos, because again, you could always take that rock and use it as a makeshift cover for a container or something. And we know that's not the case. We know that rocks are mukta on Shabbos.
Where
did he say it aside for Shabbos? Oh, he said it aside for Shabbos, and it's not a plain rock anymore. What we're talking about is a random rock in the chotzer is mukta. The answer is, Amalei, the answer is, Rabbi Ivya says, ha, ika tura kli aleha. The difference is that the lamp, fine, you could argue the inside of the lamp is filthy and disgusting, but the lamp itself is a keli, and therefore the fact that you have a use for it on Shabbos, even if you didn't intend that use before Shabbos, because before Shabbos it didn't occur to you that you're going to have a keli that needs to be covered, nevertheless, the fact that this itself is a keli makes it more mutter to do it, as opposed to when it comes to the rock. It's not considered a kavi. It's actually considered mukta mahmas gufay. So therefore, that, and there's a difference in general, even in the halacha of mukta, as we have them in the end, in halacha, in Shulchan Aruch, you have a distinction. We mentioned this the other day. You have a distinction between the kinds of mukta, the categories of mukta that are kalim, where most of them, the din, most of the categories of mukta that are kalim, the din is there are limited situations where you are allowed to move them, such as the tzarech gufoy or mekaymoy, as opposed to things that are not kalim, for example, rocks or money or what have you, those you have stricter dinim, and those in general you're not allowed to move the sort of gufoy and mekaymoy. So Rav Ivya is making the same distinction over here, that a lamp at least is a kalim. So fine, it's mukta because of mius, but in the fact that it's intrinsic, in the fact that it's a kalim means that at least you have some ability to use it on Shabbat, to redesignate it on Shabbat for a different purpose, to cover another keli, as opposed to a rock, which is mukta makom gufoy, you don't have that ability. And Rav Ivya continues, mi loy tanya, after all, didn't we learn in a braisa, hashirim, bracelets, v'hanizomim, or nose rings, or earrings, or whatever, v'hataboyz, or finger rings. Now, we're going to learn in the sixth parak of On Masechta, so in a couple of weeks, that's the Shem, we're going to talk about dinim. There are certain kinds of jewelry that the Chachamim said that women are not allowed to wear outdoors on Shabbos. We'll talk about it in the sixth parak, that they different kinds, there's different reasons because of some of them because they're loose and they might fall off on Shabbos and she's going to carry them in her Shifted Abin. Some of them because they're the kind of thing she may take off and show to her friends and end up carrying it in her Shifted Abin. We'll talk over there to what extent these didn't apply nowadays. But in any case, the fact is you have certain kinds of jewelry that are not allowed to be worn on Shabbos. So you would think in that case they should be mukta. Nevertheless, the Braisa says, Hared kechol ha-kelim anitolim b'chotzer. Nevertheless, though, like any other kelim, you're allowed to carry them around in your chotzer on Shabbos. So they're not completely mukta, again, because they're kelim. So therefore, as long as you have some other use for them on Shabbos, then you're able to do that. But Omar Ola Matam, and Ola says, what's the reason? Hoyo v'ikha todas kli olel. Precisely that. Because it has todas kli, because it has the shape and the function of a keli, therefore that makes the rules of mukta of it more lenient. And therefore you'll be allowed to move it on Shabbos for some other purpose. So the same thing when it comes to the lamp that was lit with neft. And now it's out on Shabbos, even though, yes, it's very disgusting inside, but the fact of the matter is it is a keli, and therefore you'd be allowed to move it on Shabbos. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim points out, now why did Rav Ivya need to resort to this braisa? We have much more straightforwardly a Mishnah in the 17th Perek in Amasasa. When we get back to talking about the dinim of Mukta in more detail, we learn over there that, for example, you're allowed to take a hammer on Shabbos and use it to crack nuts, even though a hammer is Mukta. So you see that you're allowed to use a klisha malachta le'isur for a different purpose on Shabbos. But the answer is, Tosfos Yeshanim says, you're still using it as a hammer. You're just using it instead of using it to bang in nails, which is also on Shabbos, using it to crack nuts, which is mutter. But over here, we're talking about using the keli for a completely different purpose than its normal purpose. Its normal purpose is to lighten it, which you can't do on Shabbos. Instead, you're using it as a cover for another keli that you can't prove from that mission over there, and therefore, if Ivya had to resort to the braisa that it was saying over here, where it's the same thing with the jewelry. You can't use it for its primary use on Shabbos, again, because the Chachamim banned wearing certain kinds of jewelry on Shabbos, but nevertheless, it's not considered mukta. It is considered mukta, but not to the extent where you can't move it at all. So there you go, says Rav Ivya. So that answers Rabbah and Rav Yosef's statement. Why do they say you're allowed to move the nest lamp? Is because it is, after all, a keli and it has a different purpose. So the Gemara finishes off. Omer of Nachman Yitzchak, Brich Rachmana, blessed is Hashem, like Hasifei Rava l'Rav Ivya. That Rava did not embarrass Rav Ivya, that Rav Ivya, after all, was able to come up with a valid answer. Now, again, we have to see, so what was going on over here? What was Rava thinking that he's trying to get Rav Ivya stuck, etc.? So the Chacham Sofer explains, and with a little bit of variation, a couple of other achronim after him also explained that what was going on was like this. Rava himself holds, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, again, in the 17th Perek, that a piece of earthenware, which otherwise has no particular use on Shabbos, is not considered mukta because when you have a situation like this, where when you have a situation like this, when you have a situation like this where your socks or your shoes or whatever are covered in mud, then you can use it to scrape off the mud on Shabbos. With details about that that we'll talk over there. It's not so simple to scrape off shoes, but socks at least there's much less of an issue. So therefore, the rabbi himself holds that. So therefore, so now when Rav Ivya came in and was sitting with his muddy socks on Rava's bed, the rabbi found that objectionable because you should have followed my own opinion, which I hold that you're allowed to use a piece of earthenware, a broken piece of pottery, for that purpose to clean it up. And why didn't you do that? So therefore, he wants to ask him from this din of a dirty lamp, expecting that eventually he's going to be able to bring the conversation around to this matter of using a piece of earthenware to scrape off the mud, just like he's asking him, after all, you could use any rock to cover a keli. And then what if Rav Ivya would concede that point, then Rava would tell him, so new, why don't you do the same thing as far as the mud on your own sock? So we're saying that in the end, Rav Ivya was able to find a different braisa that shows that it has nothing to do with the question of rocks or pieces of pottery. It's a different din specifically involving a keli, and therefore we're left with that Rava has no basis for assuming that Rav Ivya should have accepted Rava's din about using a piece of pottery to scrape off the mud from his socks, and therefore in that sense the Rav Ivya, Hashem helped that Rav Ivya was able to get away with it and not be embarrassed that he was able to find an appropriate braisa to answer Rava rather than Rava having the ability to point out to Rav Ivya, why aren't you following my opinion in halacha? It's not so much his own honor, but he held that this is the halacha, so therefore, at least if you're in my house, then you should be following that. Okay. More on this topic of Rav Shimon's opinion. Rami le Abaya le Rav, le Rava. Abaya pointed out a contradiction.
Alexander.
What?
What's the halacha regarding respecting someone's opinion on halacha that you personally don't have or someone doesn't have, but in the other person's home?
Well,
do you follow the other person's opinion?
Well, so we said before about Rabbi Bohu's opinion, for example. We said that Rabbi Bohu, when he was in Rabbi Shimon Levi's hometown, he would move lamps on Shabbos, but when he was in Rabbi Yechanan's hometown, he wouldn't, out of respect for Rabbi Yechanan.
We said it's covered. It's not halacha.
So what's the halacha? No,
so
the actual halacha is, like Rabbi Shimon, that once a lamp went out, you're allowed to move it. But that's
not what I'm asking. I'm asking if someone has an halachic opinion different than the person's halachic opinion in his own home. What do you have to do? Do you have to follow your own opinion, al-pi halacha, or you have to follow the other person's opinion on halacha?
So when the other person's opinion is l'chumra, then in general you should. In fact, you have a Gemara in Sochim that mentions a concept that the expression is dvorim amutarim, when you have something which is technically mutter, v'acherim noigim behem isu, but you have other people treat them as usur, then iyas rashoi latirim b'fnei, and you're not allowed to declare it mutter in their presence. Actually, the Gemara there mentions there are certain restrictions on that rule, but if the other person's opinion is l'chumra, then yes, you should be following it. If the other person's opinion is l'kula, then we said before, for example, we said that Rashi had said if Rav Bohu had really held that lamps are mukta on Shabbos, he couldn't have said, well, I'm coming to the Yeshua Ben Levi's hometown, and he holds this mukta, therefore, out of respect for him, I'm going to do that, because you can't be mukta, it's something that's also to yourself. That's different. No.
But if you believe that something is mukta in someone else's home who believes it is asur,
That's what I'm quoting you, Gemara and Sochin, that says, Dvorim hamutarim, v'acheidim noigim behem isu, I asur ashoi latinam b'smehem. So with the provisions that it mentions there in the Gemara, you're supposed to treat it as asur as long as you're there as well. Okay, I mean,
that's out of halacha, not covered.
Out of halacha, basically, yeah. I mean, again, the Gemara there mentions that the Gemara there mentions that maybe that refers only to Kusim or Amei Aretz or whatever. So there's details about it in Halacha. So we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that issue another time. But now let's continue the Gemara over here. Okay. So now getting back to Rav Shimon's opinion. Now we're going to talk about, again, we have a few different dinim that Rav Shimon has been saying. We have the din that he says that once the lamp has gone out on Shabbos, you're allowed to move it. We also mentioned that Rav Shimon also says that once that we also said before that once that once the lamp has gone out, Rav Shimon also says that the oil that's left over in the lamp is mutter for use on Shabbos. So now let's deal with that matter. Rami le Abaya le Rabba. Abaya pointed out to Rabba a contradiction. Tanya, we learned in a bright, so we said before, Moshe Hashem and Shabaneh v'Shabak Ka'ara Oster, the leftover oil in the lamp or in a bowl is Oster for the rest of Shabbos. But Rav Shimon Matzah, Rav Shimon says it's Mutter. We said as long as it wasn't a very large container. Alma le Rav Shimon Lesley Mutter. So we see again that Rav Shimon doesn't hold of this concept of that oil being Mutter. Or a minu, but I have a contradiction based on a Mishnah in the Sechta Beitza. The Mishnah is discussing over there a case where you have a Bechor Baal Mum on Yom Tov. Now, of course, on Yom Tov, you're allowed to Shech. And once the Bechor has a Mum, then you're allowed to Shech it and eat it. So the question is, the din is, though, that in order to Shech it, we know that you need a Chacham, we learned in the Sechta Bechorot, you need a Chacham to look at the Bechor and determine that this is, in fact, a Mum. The din is he's not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. He's not allowed to do that on Yom Tov because it's like doing a Din Torah, and you're not allowed to do a Din Torah on Yom Tov. So therefore, so the Mishnah mentions over there, suppose then, so the situation over there is that, if the Chacham was over and looked at it on Yom Tov and said it is a Mum, or you allowed to shecht it. And Rav Shimon says over there, Rav Shimon, I'm a kol she'en mum in nikum me'erv Yom Tov, if the mum was not recognizable before Yom Tov, meaning if the chacham had not looked it over before Yom Tov, ein zamin ha'mochan, then it's not considered mochan, and the animal is mukta, and you're not allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov. So you see that Rav Shimon does hold of a concept of mukta. So why should it be any different? Why would the oil that you put in the lamp and expected that all of it is going to burn, and you're saying once the lamp went out, it's not mukta anymore, and yet on the other hand, he's saying that this bechor is mukta? And the answer is, Hochi Hashta, how are you thinking to compare these two situations? Hossam, in that case, in the case of the lamp, Adam Yoshev Umatapa, Amos Aitich Benere. A person is sitting over there, and waiting. He expects that sometime over Shabbos, the lamp is going to go out. Because, again, we said the other day, in fact, if it is a very large lamp, or we said a lantern or something, where there's a reasonable chance that where it's highly likely that it is actually going to burn throughout Shabbos, then we said actually Rav Shimon would agree that the oil in it remains mukta. But in the case of a regular lamp, which only burns a couple of hours, then a person has a reasonable expectation that it's going to go out during Shabbos. Therefore, to begin with, at the beginning of Shabbos, he never mentally put that oil out of mind. He always had in mind that as soon as the lamp goes out, the oil is going to be mutter. Hacha, Adam Yoshev Matzapa Mosi Yipol Ben Mum. Over here, can you say that a person is waiting constantly? When is a mum going to happen to the bechor? It's a more far fetched thing. First of all, the person is going to think to himself as follows. First of all, miyema dimnapol ben mumah. First of all, who says a mum is even ever going to happen in this animal? Not necessarily. Not every animal develops a mum during its lifetime. The intimfloima dimnapol ben mumah. Even if it does end up developing a mum, miyema dimnapol ben mum kavua. Who says it's going to be a permanent mum? As we learned in Masech the Bechardos, there are certain kinds of mumim that are only temporary. Eventually, the animal recovers from it, and then those are not considered the kind of mum that you can shech the bechor because of. So you have that. So even if there's a mum, it might not be a mum kavua. The imkimtaloyma dimnapol ben mum kavua miyema dimizdakik lechacham. And even if there ends up being a mum kavua, who says that the chacham is going to go and deal with it on Yom Tov? Especially considering that you're not even allowed to do it on Yom Tov, you would have to have this chacham. Would have to be breaking a din de rabbanan on Yom Tov to look at it. So it's so far fetched, therefore, that the person is not going to even bother having in mind that maybe it'll be mutter on Shabbos. We assume that he completely puts it out of mind, and therefore that's that. In fact, Tosfos over here discusses, and other Rishonim discuss, that you don't even need all of this chain of Sfeikas. Even if you just have, even if, let's say, the mum was already noticeable on Erev Yom Tov, but you didn't have a Chacham check it yet, just the fact that you need a chacham to look at it, and he's not supposed to do that on Yom Tov, is reason enough to say that is reason enough to say that Rav Shimon would consider it muktzah. Okay, I mean there is a distinction also. Now we said before that Rav Shimon had only held that things are muktzah if gachahu be a dayim, if you pushed it away with your own two hands, like you had something we said about the grogris of demukim, for example, the dried figs or raisins, that you actually took fresh grapes or fresh figs and put them up there to start drying out, then that's when Rav Shimon would say this mukta. The Bukhur, obviously, you didn't do that, because you didn't make it a Bukhur in the first place. Nevertheless, we're still saying Rav Shimon would say over here it's mukta. The Baal HaMor explains that the reason is, because after all, there is an issue involved, and we said before, Rav Shimon does agree with mukta machmad issue. The Ramban and Milchomet over there gives a different explanation, and he says, because the difference is, that at least in the case of things like the grapes and figs, at least there is the possibility you could eat them to begin with. Obviously, you could eat them when they're fresh, and even when they're drying, if it was really the shachat chas, you could eat them. As opposed to over here, there's no possible case where you can eat this bechor until it has a mum, until a chacham has checked it, because until then it's considered kosher. So therefore, the Shimon would agree that here you don't need to be docha be a dying in order for it to be considered muktzah. You are no, that's treifa. You're not allowed to eat it, but a mum is not that thing. Okay, so therefore, so that explains it. So the Shimon in general does not hold of muktzah, but in this particular case of the Bukhar, he does agree because the person does not consider it very likely that he's going to find a chacham who's going to agree to see it on Yom Tov and declare that this is a mum. Okay. Masiv Rami Bar Chama. However, in that case, if that's the answer, that it's very unlikely to find a chacham who is going to look at it on Yom Tov, then Rami Bar Chama says, in that case, I have a contradiction based on the last Mishnah of Or Mitzvah. The Mishnah says, Mitzvirin Nidarim B'Shabbos, you're allowed, now let's see, there's a concept the Torah tells us that if a woman makes a neder, then her husband is her father when before she's married, her husband afterwards is able to be nefer the neder. He's allowed to cancel it. He's able sometime during that day to say mufer loch. This neder is canceled for you, and then that's it. The neder is not a neder, so you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. V'nishalim l'nedarim shem l'sarach haShabbos. You're also allowed to go and be mafir neder by a rav. When it's a nether that's for the sake of Shabbos. For example, let's say you made a nether that you're not going to eat today, and today is Shabbos, and you're supposed to eat a Shabbos meal, so you're allowed to go to a rav to be matzah nether. The Gemara discusses over there at the very end of the Masechta, do we mean that both of these things are only for the Tzarech HaShabbos, or is the husband able to be made for his wife, even if it's not? Well, Tzarech HaShabbos, anyway, the point is, so we're saying that the husband is able to cancel his wife's nether on Shabbos. Now the question is, And the implication is once he does, then whatever it is, she said that she's also to eat, now she's mutter to eat. V'amai, now why should it be mutter? Lema miyema dimizakis labal. Why don't we say the same logic? Who says that the husband is going to want to get involved and be made for the neder? So by the same token, you should say, in other words, that the same way as we said about the bukhur, that it's not necessarily that a chacham is going to be willing to look at that there is going to be willing to look at the bukhur and declare that this is a mumen you can shecht it. The same way we can argue that not necessarily is the husband going to be willing to be master to be made for the neder. After all, it depends on his own willingness to be made for it. Maybe he's not going to. So we should say by the same logic that she should consider that the food is muktzah to her, and that's so even if he's made for the nether, it should remain muktzah. Now, granted, Tosfa said, we don't mean that it's going to be muktzah in the sense that you can't move it, because after all, nobody else is subject to this nether, only the wife herself. But what we mean is, in other words, that at least we should at least say that it's muktzah to her. That's muktzah to her to eat on Shabbos and maybe to move also. Also, Tosfos says we could be talking about the payrus actually belong to her, and then in that case, she does have the right to offer them to everybody. Whatever. The question is, if you're going to say the logic that the chacham is not necessarily going to look at the bechor on Shabbos, then the same way the husband is not necessarily going to do the hafaras nedarim on Shabbos, so why does it become muktzah? The answer is Hasan Kadira Pinchas Mishmeh Rava. The answer is that would go according to what Pinchas says in the name of Rava. The Amr Pinchas Mishmeh Rava, Kala Nederes, Adas Baila Hinederes. Very simple. When she makes the neder, to begin with, she has in mind that she's only making it on the condition that her husband ends up agreeing. So in other words, it's a conditional nether. It's a conditional nether. So therefore, she's not really completely masiyach daf from the food, because she knows to begin with, I made this nether, right now that means that food is off limits to me, but I know that sometime between now and shkia of the next day, the husband could be made for the nether as soon as he finds out about it. So therefore the nether is not really such an ironclad thing, and therefore there's a certain sense in which she figures that there is a possibility after all that I might end up being mutter to eat this food on Shabbat, as opposed to, again, the case with the Bechor, where there's no possibility. If the Chacham doesn't show up and is master it, then there's no possible way that it's going to be mutter. And to begin with, when the Bechor itself is not also unconditioned, the Bechor itself is also unconditionally, as opposed to with the Neder over here, it's conditional. Okay, continues the Gemara. What about Tashma? The Mishnah had continued, Nish'olim and Adonim shall tzarech HaShabbos b'Shabbos. Actually, it's a braisa, whatever. But you're allowed to go to a Chacham and be matir, neder, something that's needed for Shabbos, on Shabbos, implying, in other words, let's say a person made a neder that he's not going to eat, that he's not going to eat this particular food, let's say, and then he goes to a Chacham and is matir, neder on Shabbos, it sounds like now he's able to eat that food. Again, you could argue who says the Chacham is going to be willing to get involved. So therefore, by the same logic, you should say it's like the Bechor, and therefore there's no possibility of eating it on Shabbos, and it should remain mukta for the rest of Shabbos. The answer is Hasam, because he's not dependent only on the Chacham. Because Elam is Dafik, like Chacham, Sagilei, the Gimel Hadyotis. Because in the case of being Matir Neder, if you can't find a Chacham, you can instead go to three Hadyotis. In fact, actually nowadays, the din is, you don't even go to a Chacham, because we don't have a Chacham of the caliber who's able to be Matir Neder by himself. You know, for that, a Chacham Mumcha, and we don't have that nowadays. So nowadays, when we're Matir Neder, it's always using three people. Hadyotis doesn't necessarily just mean people off the street. It means people who at least one of them knows the dinim of Nedarim. Fine, but the point is, in other words, that the point is, so you're not limited only to going to the Chacham, to the Rav of the city. Let's say you can find any three people, you can find three Balabasim in the city and have them be able to be Matir your nether. So again, you don't necessarily put the food out of mind mentally for all of Shabbos, because you realize that there's always a real possibility that you're going to be able to be Matir that nether on Shabbos. Again, here specifically you need a Chacham, and one who actually has the permission, Yakei Bechoros, that he has the kind of smicha that allows him to check Bechoros and determine whether they have a mum or not. And that kind of person is not very easy to find, and much less that he's going to be willing to do it on Yom Tov, when after all, Midrabanan, you're not allowed to. So therefore, he must be echdas from it for the entire Yom Tov. Continues the Gemara. Romi lay abaya l'Rav Yehuda. Okay, let's continue further on this topic of Rav Shimon's opinion. Now, okay, so we dealt with the matter of the oil. Now let's get back to the matter of when the lamp went out. Romi lay abaya l'Rav Yehuda. Mi amar Rav Shimon kov sa mutar l'talpula. So you're telling me Rav Shimon says that once the lamp went out, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, implying kov sa ein loy kov sa loy. So only if it went out, but implying as long as it's lit, then you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Now why not? Why not? Why should you not be allowed to move it when it's still burning? The answer is, are you going to say, it's still part of the question. Are you going to say the reason is because as you're moving it, it may go out? The problem with that is, so what if it goes out? We know that Rav Shimon holds that if you do something on Shabbat and accidentally a malacha gets performed, then Rav Shimon allows it, and you're allowed to do the thing to begin with, as long as it's not sick ratio. The Tanya, as we learned before, Rav Shimon, I'm a good other mite case of the Sassel. We said before, Rav Shimon says that you're allowed to drag a chair or bed or bench on Shabbat on dirt, over vajra yiskavin lachas chorit, as long as you don't mean to make a groove in the ground. and he says that you're allowed to barchila. So therefore, so what's the problem? So let him move this lamp. If it accidentally goes out, so what? Reb Shimon says, why should Reb Shimon ask him to move the lamp as long as it's lit? The answer is, kol heicha d'chimachavin ikei sota d'alaisa. The answer is like this. You could say, if he has in mind to do it, there will be an issa d'alaisa. Then you could say, kila mechavin gozer Reb Shimon m'drabanam. Then you could say, even when he doesn't have kavana, then Reb Shimon would be gozer m'drabanam. Namely, when it comes to the lamp, now if you intend to put out the lamp on Shabbos, then you're over on an Issur D'oraisa, because usually when you're putting it out, it's for the sake, we learned before in the second paragraph, it's usually for the purpose of making that the wick will now be easier to light next time. So therefore, and that would be a Malacha D'oraisa. So therefore, Sir Reb Shimon is going to say that we're going to make it also the Rabbanan to move the lamp as well, because in case you might have that in mind. But where even if you had in mind, all that's going to happen is it's a Rabbanan, because when it comes to dragging the furniture, even if you do end up digging up the dirt, that's not going to be an Issa D'Araisa, because you're not doing it in the usual way. The usual way of digging on Shabbos would be you use a shovel or something. So like this, you're digging up the dirt using a bench or whatever. It's not the usual way. So even that itself would only be an Issa D'Rabbanan. Therefore, Kila Mechaven, Shari Reb Shimon, L'Hatchila. So therefore, if you're not having in mind to dig up the dirt, then Reb Shimon will allow it L'Hatchila as well. So that's the answer so far. That there's a difference between whether the actual malacha that might end up getting done is also d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. However, Masiv Rava. However, Rava asks on that. We learn in a Mishnah which we quoted previously. Moichik sus moichik kedak. And we said people who are selling shatnez clothes are allowed to sell them normally, where it means that they wear the clothing in order to show potential buyers how it fits. Or the Ritva says that actually they don't actually wear it, but what they do is they drape it over their shoulders. Anyway, they're allowed to do that, and it's not considered that they're having hana from Kalayim, because they're not intending to have hana. Over Vajle Skavan Bachama Vnechama over Gshamim Mithnagshamim, as long as they don't in fact have intention to enjoy the clothing when sunny, because it's protecting them from the sun, from the heat, or with shamim, or during the winter when it's raining with nag shamim, because it's protecting them from the rain. If they have that in mind, it would be also, because then of course they're having hanah for the shatnez, but otherwise it would be mutter. However, the Mishnah continues by snuin, but the people who are careful to avoid anything which would cause people to say that they're being over on a din, mafshilin b'makalachare, and they hold the clothing on a stick behind them without it touching them at all. So the question is, now here we're talking about shatnez, which is an issur d'oraisa, and if he has that kavana, that the clothing will protect him from the heat or the cold, then he is over on an issur d'oraisa, kilo mekaven shori Reb Shimon l'chila. And yet Reb Shimon, which would say in this Mishnah goes according to Reb Shimon, he holds that even l'chila you're allowed to wear the clothing. It's only the tznuim that don't do that. So we see that Reb Shimon doesn't care whether the actual malacha or actual issur is going to be d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. Ella, Amar Rabba. So Rabba says, no, I'll give you a different answer. Hanach l'ner shemen upsila. Never mind the matter of a lamp which contains oil on a wick. Hoyo b'nasa bosses for d'abar osur. Because all of that becomes a base for something which is osur, namely the flame itself is osur, is mukta on Shabbos. Therefore, just like you said before, for example, you have a bed that you meant for putting money on, and you left money on it deliberately before Shabbos. You said the bed remains muksa for the whole Shabbos. The same way, over here, the lamp becomes a basis for davar aser. And therefore, so again, now Reb Shimon doesn't hold that if it was muksa at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains muksa for all of Shabbos. So therefore, according to him, once it goes out on Shabbos, then you're allowed to move it. But as long as the flame is burning, then it's a basis for davar aser. And the point is also, Tosfos mentions that the Gemara had to mention the oil and the wick, that all of them form a basis, that the all three things, the lamp and the oil and the wick, all form a basis for davar aser, because if you were saying that only one of them is a basis for davar aser, then it wouldn't actually make it mukta, because the din is just like we talked about the other day with the Shabbos table, with the Shabbos candles and the chalas on it, where the table is not muktzah, because it has heter and issur on it together, the same way. If you were to say, let's say, for example, that only the lamp is considered a bosses of zavar osur, and let's say you were to say that the oil is not, then you have it contained something which is osur and something which is muktzah, and it would be allowed to move. So the fact that we're saying that all three components, the lamp and the oil and the wick, are all a bosses of zavar osur, namely the flame, means that none of them are allowed to be moved on Shabbos as long as the flame is lit, is what Rav Shimon is saying. So that's the reason, ultimately, why Rav Shimon is saying that you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos, not because you might put it out, but because the whole thing is a bosses of zavar osur as long as it's lit. Again, once it went out, Rav Shimon is saying you are actually allowed to move it on Shabbos. So in certain areas, so we said that in many areas of the halacha in Muktzah, the halacha is actually like Rav Shimon. In some of them it's not. There are certain aspects of the halacha of Muktzah where we do paskin like Rav Yehuda. One of them being this matter of that if something is Muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains Muktzah for all of Shabbos. So that actually is the halacha. We do say that if it was never lit this Shabbos, then fine, you're allowed to move it. But if it was lit this Shabbos, then once it was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos, and again, we're saying even Rav Shimon would agree that it is muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos because of buses, whatever also, then we say in that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, that it remains also for the rest of Shabbos.
At the beginning of Shabbos, muktzah.
That's the general rule. Something that was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos remains muktzah for the rest of Shabbos. Okay.